Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today sold his first business at just 15 years old. And has since spent the past 41 years building, growing, and selling countless others, both his own and for his clients. He is currently the founder and CEO of Zero Limits Ventures, a small and middle market mergers and acquisitions firm. In this conversation, we discuss how to understand what drives the value of a business, why an exit strategy is more about strategy than the exit, and spinning up an area of expertise. Now, attack Steve Little. As we get into today's conversation, we're going to hear a deep dive into understanding what drives the value of your business. Is it customers, contracts, culture? To really understand this, we need insights into our customers, clients, and our markets. To do this simply and beautifully, we need Typeform. Typeform is versatile. You can use it at every stage of the funnel to research, lead generation, sell stuff with Stripe integrations, tutorials, quizzes, even FAQs if you're short on support. The results don't lie. Typeform has a 57% completion rate on surveys, which goes absolutely against the industry average of 20%. That's more data for you to play with, more data for you to understand what drives the value of your business. Typeform integrates with your favorite tools, including Google Sheets, MailChimp, Airtable, and hundreds more. Plus, the reason why they are so effective is because Typeforms are a joy to fill out. Your customers will absolutely love them. The experience on mobile is sublime. Some might even say fun. And who's ever said that a typical survey is fun? Yeah, no one has. Remember, business doesn't have to be boring. What you ask matters. How you ask is everything. Sign up for free today. Go to typeform.com/hack. When collecting data, remember rule number one. Put people first, data second. As a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, if you sign up today for free and you upgrade to their pro, you're going to get 30% off for the first 6 months. To get that deal right now and start collecting the data you need to understand the value in your business, go to typeform.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very special guest. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, John. Great to be here.
It's absolutely my pleasure. And I believe we're going to have a lot of fun. So should we jump into it?
Sure, let's do it.
Excellent. Steve, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Wow. Well, you know, I think there are, it sort of falls into a couple of different categories, but at the root of it is really sort of what's going on inside the entrepreneur, in my opinion. I mean, yeah, you're going to have some disciplined practices and routines and, you know, be smart about business process and so forth. That's all pretty straightforward. But what I've found over the years, I've been doing this a long time, is that really having your head right is the most important thing. And what I mean by that is really being clear about what your intention is, really being clear about, you know, what are you looking to accomplish, not just day to day, but also day to day, but really at a higher order of thinking, like, you know, why am I here? What am I actually contributing to the world, so to speak? And, you know, how do I want to have an impact on the lives of others? And what do I do each day or with each interaction that allows me to realize that? So what I find is that if I'm clear about that, and then as the day progresses, I'm sort of served up opportunities to contribute value, to make an impact, to deliver sort of my personal superpower, right? and that's to the benefit of others. And, you know, when you deliver value, you receive value, right?
So you've been at this game for just over 40 years, Steve. Why 41 years into this, why are you here now?
Yeah. Well, I have a couple of really key driving purposes myself. So my mission is really to contribute by helping others reach their objectives, helping other people accomplish the things they really intend to accomplish. So as you know, John, I'm in the M&A business, and you think about mergers and acquisitions, you think about big bankers and brokers and, you know, all kinds of deals, from shady deals to great ones, right? And all that's true. But what I've learned over the years is that one of the most important factors that exists in my world is that I'm working with people on what is probably one of, if not the largest financial transaction they'll ever experience in their lifetime. And what's really interesting to me about it is that those last 2 weeks before the deal is closed, the average seller gets a little irrational about things. They sort of, you know, they sort of lose track of what's really going on here. You know, there's a lot of deep psychological motivations for that, you know, and I'll spare everybody the gore on that one. But what I found is that if about a month before that transaction is scheduled to close, I sit down with that seller and start talking to him about what he's going to do next. You know, I mean, not what your next job is or what your next business is, although those are important factors. But really, you know, I'm about to deliver $20 million to you, you know, John. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with it? I mean, what are you here to contribute? And putting them in touch with a higher purpose like that, they just skate right through that period of irrationality. Right? Because now they're focused on something beyond the sale of their business. They're focused on, you know, I don't know whether it's, you know, housing kids in Haiti or feeding kids in Africa. It's whatever it is for them, right? But it really helps them get connected to a mission. And so I look at myself and sort of the mission that I'm on, which is oriented towards the rainforest and the oceans, and I really feel passionate about that kind of thing. So that's my personal goal. But the way I'm delivering to make a broad contribution in the world is by empowering other people to find their mission, find their purpose, find the thing that drives them, the thing that they've always wanted to do but never thought they could do, and put them in the pathway to get them there.
I love it. And so this idea, I think you answered this, I'm not sure. So this idea of like your driving metric is sort of to find out what like their objectives are. How often do you find that like a founder or an entrepreneur who's coming into a month out of selling a company. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's the success that people often measure this whole game by, right? But yep. How often do you feel that the person, she or he, actually has their objectives in mind that are actually the proper objectives, not just, I just want a whole bunch of money?
Yeah.
Because we both know that's not the objective, because that doesn't make any of us happy.
No, exactly. Well, I would say that a majority don't have a clear vision, but they have some ideas. In other words, they know they want to do something important, right? They want to make a contribution, have an impact. I mean, those are sort of the words I use, but they haven't really identified what specifically it is. And in many cases, they haven't really oriented themselves towards their personal passion, right? It's a sad reality, actually, John, that in general terms, not just in entrepreneurship, but, you know, in the employment world as well, is people just get busy doing the stuff necessary to make a buck. Because you're right, money doesn't bring happiness, but it, you know, makes things a heck of a lot easier.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. So, I'm not denying that.
Right. So it's, you know, that you sort of get, when I talk to business owners, you know, I ask two questions, right? First question is, what's your exit strategy? The answers I get fall into two categories. One of them is they say something like, well, we don't have one. So that's, you know, pure honesty, right? The other one is, well, we're going to grow it and someone's going to buy us, which is interesting, but not a strategy, right? So it's like, okay, I get the idea. And that's 99% of the time, those are the answers. So very few business owners who haven't thought about this before really have no idea. The next thing I ask them is, well, Do you know what drives the value of your business? What makes your business valuable? The answers to this one are fascinating. I get responses like, what do you mean? Like revenue and earnings? Is that what you're talking about, Steve? Right? Sort of question, right? Those are important factors. True statement. But they are typically not the things that actually drive the value. And we look at businesses like Zappos and Starbucks and, you know, name a business. They're connected to deep value drivers that really have very little to do with revenue and earnings, right? So when you think about it, when a organization, when a company is led by an individual who has a key set of values, you know, a key set of motives, a key purpose, then the organization typically, whether they realize it or not, sort of fall in behind that. And it's really all about accomplishing that higher purpose than it is about making, you know, revenue and profitability. Although day to day, you still have to measure the KPIs of your business and keep managing, you know, the resources of the business to accomplish that thing. But I would say that because of that, because people don't invest a lot of time typically and energy here, they get really myopically focused on the KPIs. A small percentage of people actually come to this phase of their business with a clear understanding of what it is they want to do or what they want to accomplish with this enormous win they're about to realize.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's talk about this sort of like, because as an exit, I like this, and I'm going to take you sort of off the path and take you way, way back. Because not that long ago, you were, I believe, 15 years old, and you started a company, your first company, and you exited it successfully.
Yeah. I started when I was 13. Very typical 13-year-old story. I wanted to make some money. Asked my dad, you know, how can I make some money? He said, well, go cut the grass. And I went out and cut the grass. And then I said, ah, it's good. How can I make more money? We'll cut the neighbor's grass. And, you know, and literally 3 weeks into it, I was like, I do not like cutting grass. Okay. So, you know, but I already had a bunch of people that said that I could cut their grass, right? So I went and hired some other kids or some other people, and they cut the grass and I collected the money, and I sort of arbitraged the fees, and, you know, I charge $8 and pay $5, you know, that kind of thing. And that just grew and grew and grew and grew. One day I had a really interesting experience. It was August. We lived outside of Philadelphia. Anybody who doesn't know, August in Philadelphia is a pretty miserable experience. And the grass doesn't grow very quickly. So I'd have to go resell every job every week, right? You know, pedaling my bicycle from door to door. And I started hearing, you know, people say, well, look, you know, it's not growing that fast. Give it 2 weeks. Come back in 2 weeks. Right. And after that happened about five times one day, and I thought, man, this is costing me some serious money. Okay. Because I'm not making any money. Right. So came up with an idea. My idea was I would offer them either a semi-annual or an annual contract, and I would take care of everything outside their house. So I'd cut their grass, I'd trim their hedges, I'd trim the driveway, I'd rake the leaves, I'd pick up the sticks, I'd shovel the walk, you know, whatever. And for one flat fee every month, I'd just take care of the outside of their house. And almost everybody went for that. And I started accumulating a book of contracts. And I actually, I don't know, I'm going to date myself a little bit. I don't even know if they still have these. But back then in grade school, you had these big loose leaf binders that had like a blue cloth cover on them, right? And you could write on that cover. So I wrote on there in black magic marker, Steve's Big Book of Business, right? And I just accumulated all these contracts in there. And there were quite a few. There was, you know, well over 50 to 75 contracts in there. One day my dad came home and said, hey, you know, I've been transferred. We're moving. I was like, what am I going to do with my business? Now understand that my dad thought I was cutting a couple of neighbors' yards. I mean, he didn't realize I had 35 employees, right? So I had a warehouse full of equipment down the other end of the neighborhood, right? He didn't know any of that was going on. So I said, no, I don't think you understand. You know, I mean, you know, I got a lot of stuff going on here. And I showed him the book, and he just completely flipped out. He said, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm an engineer. I don't know anything about any of this. What do you do with a business like this? So right around that time, again, dating myself, is when companies like Lawn Doctor and Chemlawn were just really getting a foothold in major metropolitan areas like that. And there was one of each of those in nearby towns. So I had him drive me over there, and they, you know, I went to the owner, the franchise owner, and showed him my book. I said, I'm selling these contracts, right? Or I'm selling these projects, I think is what I said. And he flipped through them, and, you know, long story short, one guy offered me $187,000, the other guy offered me $200,000, just a little less than $225,000.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a lot of money, right? And
it was.
You know, so it was pretty exciting. But I think the thing that's relevant about that story, John, is that while I can't say categorically that I could have stated this lesson when I was 15, I did learn the lesson of understanding what drives the value of a business. Because what drove the value of that business were the number of contracts in that book, right? So I could go out the next week and I could sell 15 more contracts and increase the selling price of my business as a result, right? Because it was the value driver. Now, of course, the Kenlon guy was seeing this as millions of dollars worth of business. I mean, he would pick up, you know, 150 new clients, and he could charge them for spraying pesticides and all the fertilizers and all the stuff that he does, right? Plus the stuff that I did. So it was all, you know, it was gosh knows how much money he made off of those contracts, right? But that was the lesson. And I could articulate the lesson years later when I look back. I didn't realize it in that moment that that's what I was doing. But it's a pattern that I used repeatedly throughout my life as I went from one business to another. I started to see that, hey, you know, I just seem to have this knack for being able to figure out, here's what's driving the value of this business. This is where we need to focus our attention, right? And that's the relevance of the story. Now, over the years, I've had many, many businesses through college. I had businesses of all kinds. I quit college early, started a construction company, did really well with that. And, you know, just I've always sort of been on my own, doing my own thing, coming up with a new value proposition for a particular market. Ultimately, I ended up out in Silicon Valley working for top-tier venture firms. And my job was to go into one of their portfolio companies and figure out, what do we have to do to pivot this company onto a high return acquisition strategy, right? And so I got pretty good at it, sold a bunch of companies and did really well. But it was always the same thing. What's driving the value of this business? And if the people inside the company didn't know, I'd go talk to the customers or would-be customers and find out from them what they thought was driving the value of the business, right? And, you know, we find it and we pivot the company around that and build great value.
I love it. So understanding what drives the value of the business, it's not just a revenue metric like so many people immediately think.
No.
Any number of things put together.
I mean, if it were, then Snapchat would be valueless, right?
Right.
Because they have no revenue. They have no earnings. So how can they be worth $25 billion or whatever the number is today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there has to be something else, right? It can't be just as simple as, well, the number of eyeballs, the number of customers. Well, that's not it either. Because if you look at a pattern like Zappos and Amazon, I mean, Amazon paid $1 billion for Zappos. When you think about it, did Zappos have any customers that Amazon either didn't already have or couldn't get? You know, probably not. If you've bought anything online, you've probably bought something from Amazon, right?
Definitely.
Then did they sell any products that Amazon couldn't sell? No, Amazon sells shoes, right? So what was it that made Zappos worth $1 billion? Really understanding that is really revealing to this whole principle of value drivers, right? And as it turns out, it was the culture of the company that made it so valuable to Amazon, because Amazon was in the midst of a massive pivot, introducing Prime and the distributed warehouse centers and all those things. They had to shift the culture of their company to operate in a much more autonomous fashion, which, of course, was the premise behind Tony Hsieh's creation of Zappos. So it worked out to be perfect.
Right. And I don't want to put you on the spot, because I said I wouldn't before we started recording, but do you have any, like, well, do you have any places just off the top of your head, either books or like websites, that people can kind of go and understand this more, this concept of like what drives the value of a business?
Oh, absolutely. I have a website, zerolimitsventures.com. And on that site, there's a page, zerolimitsventures.com/access. And if they go there, there's three things they can get there. There's about a 55-minute long video where I go into all these principles in great detail. I've got great charts and graphs and, you know, cool stuff that it keeps it interesting. Okay. Even though I'm a profoundly boring speaker, right? So there's also an ebook there, a manifesto there that called the Valuation Growth Playbook. It tells you how to assess your own business and figure out where your value drivers are and then what to do about that. And then there's also an opportunity to schedule an hour with me on the phone.
Very cool. Very cool. We'll get into that at the very end, but I love that. ZeroLimitsVentures.com/access if right. You want to learn more about what drives the value of a business or your business.
Exactly.
Also, Steve, if you haven't at this point or haven't thought of this, which I'm sure you have, I would love to eventually see you write and publish Steve's big book of business. Your like eponymous business knowledge all, because that's a great title for and it would just tie that whole first story all together. So well.
It would. That's a good idea. I'm going to have to pay you royalty for that one now. So.
Well, we have this one recorded.
That's so. Right.
Okay. So let's use this to sort of move into and segue into projects, because obviously writing a book would be a huge, massive project. And we're not going to talk about that because I just threw that on you. Okay. But let's talk about projects, because you've been at this game a long time. You have probably a huge network around you and of ideas and people with ideas, and yourself probably included. Mm. It's just something that happens, I think, to us as entrepreneurs and business people.
Yeah.
But you also have a limit on your time and a limit on how much you want to work. So there has to be some sort of sifting system that you go through. But I would love it, Stephen. Like, a project can be anything, like big or small, either within Zero Limits or even the idea of a new business. But I would love to know what your process, and whether that's a written or just a gut check sort of process, but what process do you go through today to determine that a project is worth your time, energy, and resources?
Yeah, it's really simple, man. It's the same formula I used all those years working for the VC firms. You just figure out what people want, you know? So in a practical sense for my business, I mean, honestly, if I had a dollar for every time I've retired, I'd never have had to work, right? I mean, I can't really stay away, right? It's just one of those things. But I did retire for a duration of time when I was very young, raised two daughters, one got married, one went to school. Now, and then I got bored, decided to go back to work, right? And do the same kind of work I was doing, without the VC overhang this time. And that's what led to the creation of Zero Limits Ventures. It really started out, I was just doing some basic consulting for people, helping them understand what was going on in their business. And then those two questions kept coming up. And I kept seeing that nobody knows the answers to these two questions. And these are very important questions to be able to answer. You better understand what your acquisition or your exit strategy is. And as I like to tell people, John, no matter how it is, there's going to be an exit. Whether you sell your company or keel over dead at your desk, there's going to be an exit. Okay, so you have to decide, do you want your business to be worth more then than it is now? And if you do, then you need to understand what that is and what's driving the value of the business, right? So I look at the whole marketplace of opportunity based on what do people really need from me? You know, I've got years of experience, but what of that experience can I assemble or encapsulate in some offer that actually delivers real tangible value to them? And so that's a very simple process of talking to people and asking them, right? So when I ask a business owner those two questions and they 99% of the time don't know the answers, and I explain why it's important for them to know, they pretty much want to know the answer, right? So I help them find that answer, right? Does that make sense? Right? That's really what it's about. More recently, I've been watching some really interesting trends, of course, in my line of work. We pay attention to, you know, trend activity in the market all the time, constantly. I mean, last year we saw a major transition from strategic buyers to private equity buyers, and what that meant to all of us in the business was significant, and so on and so forth. And I've seen something recently, you know, this whole area of Amazon sellers, you know, people who are selling products over the Amazon network for using the Amazon infrastructure as their infrastructure, right? And there's just so many of them now. I mean, it started out as sort of a novelty. Now there's, I don't know how many, hundreds of thousands, I'm sure, by now, right? And they represent sort of a really unique kind of business model that has a number of very unique value-driving attributes. So they're not typically going to be, you know, big, you know, 8 and 9 figure exits. You know, they might touch 8, probably not 9, right?
Mm-hmm.
you know, but they're usually going to be, you know, six or seven right in there, but or seven anyway. But there's the unique attributes are that you know, you can, the way that we address them in the M&A world is quite different from other things. So I've been looking recently at, you know, maybe we could spin up an area of specialization. So get some of our resources, sort of push them off and dedicate them to becoming, you know, really high level experts in the management of Amazon business M&A, right, as a unique area. Because we have, what's emerged recently are private equity firms that specialize in Amazon businesses, Amazon sellers, right? So they're capitalizing, they're acquiring these businesses, putting them together in a portfolio, raising the value of the portfolio for 4 or 5 years, spinning them off into another larger PE firm, right? So there's, you know, a whole strategy around what to do with the owner so he gets more than one bite at the apple, you know, how to help them see that, look, you've created this business, but this business in the context of a portfolio of businesses is much more valuable. So we want to move it in that direction and do it in such a way that you gain the benefit of that opportunity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. So it's brilliant. I love it. This idea of specializing in acquisitions of Amazon selling companies, because you're right, they're just taking off and some of them are doing really, really well. Some of them now want to exit and start other businesses, mm-hmm. but there's only sort of, most people are dealing just in like marketplaces where you can just go and sell your website.
Right.
So less as a business and more as a website.
Yeah.
So what do you, like, what's going through your head sort of, like, how long will you sit on an idea, or have you been sort of like mulling this idea over before you're going to like do something to execute?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So that's the way it shows up for me. And part of this is, you know, I think because I'm old, I don't know, but I'll get an idea and that's the first thing I'll do with it is sort of, you know, plant it in my subconscious. So I have a little technique that I use. It's nothing radically new. It's been around for millions of years, probably. You know, I'll write something down that's relevant to the idea, and I'll look at it before I sleep, and then I'll sleep, and my subconscious mind cranks on it all night, and I wake up in the morning, and I've got this fantastic idea, this great answer to a really hard problem or something like that, right? So this is all well-documented neuroscience, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it sort of progresses that way. So I take, you know, the genesis of an idea, I plant it, I sort of nurture it, I grow it, you know, I get an insight. Like, hey, you know, to really find out about that, you should talk to, you know, Joe Schwarzenheimer over at, you know, M&M Logistics or something, right? And so I'll follow that bit of inspiration and I'll take it through to its culmination. And then when it's done, I'll put it aside. And then, you know, I'll just keep cooking on the idea in the background. And then I'll get another inspiration to take another step, or I'll see another piece of validating support for the idea, right? And I'll pursue that. And eventually it sort of emerges as something that's taken real form where I could actually describe it to somebody and say, you know, this is what I see with these kinds of businesses, and this is what I think they need, and this is how we're going to deliver to that need, right? Then at that juncture, then you have something you can actually go, you can contact, I usually like to contact at least a dozen prospective partners or prospective clients. Say, I have an idea. Here's my idea. Would this idea be valuable to you? And they usually say, yeah, that'd be amazing. Okay, well, great. So what would it be worth to you? Okay. I mean, would you, is it like a lot of money or is it a little money? Is it like half the value of your business? I mean, what's it really worth to you, right? And usually you get some pretty keen insights there about, you know, how people really value things. And that formula is not new by any stretch of the imagination. It's the same formula that you would use if you were launching a new product. I mean, if you came up with a new app idea, right? There's two ways people do this, the wrong way and the right way. Wrong way is they build the app and hope somebody wants it. Big mistake, right? Silicon Valley is full of companies that have, you know, great products, great solutions looking for a problem, right? So, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you don't want that. Instead, what you want to do is make sure you validate first. So go talk to some people who would be interested in buying it. And if they're not interested, then you know it's not such a great idea, right?
Asking a prospective client to sort of like put a value on your idea and your work is, especially like in your case, These are literally people who you need to help them understand what drives the value in their own businesses. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are you not now asking them to tell you what drives the value in your business?
No, it's not so much that, although that's an interesting way of putting it. It's really, let's take a look at the Amazon seller idea, right? So to approach an Amazon seller and say, hey, you know, we sell your business and, you know, maybe they've seen my presentation and have realized that they're past the 26-month window and they really need to sell their business. And so they want to talk to me about selling their business. And, you know, we talk about that. Well, if at the same time I'm spinning up a specialty, right, there's a special set of services, a special set of considerations that are associated with these kinds of businesses. You know, I could take them through a discussion of those unique attributes of this service, knowing that this service is perhaps a premium price service or perhaps a discounted price service, depends on the scenario, right? But, you know, but it's not the same. Selling an Amazon business is not the same as selling a $100 million, you know, pallet company, right? They're just not the same, okay? So nothing's going to be the same. The amount of effort required, not the same. So in the Amazon businesses, because there's a common infrastructure, they end up being quite a bit easier than another type of corporation. So we can repackage some of our services and provide more value in certain areas than we otherwise would. So that's what I mean by reviewing that with the customer, the client, and, you know, to get them to see that, yeah, no, it would be really valuable to understand this aspect because I want to do this again. Right? I want to sell this one. I'm just going to do another one. So knowing this before I go into the other one, wow, yeah, that'd be hugely valuable, right?
It's like your value continues on even beyond this sale.
Exactly.
Because now they know, now they have that insight building the next business.
Well, and that's the point, right? I mean, if you look at my big mission is to empower them to accomplish their greatest purpose. And so each of these businesses is another stepping stone for them to accomplish whatever they're here to accomplish, whatever that is. Like I said, feeding starving children in Africa or housing kids in Haiti or fixing the oceans, right? It's whatever it is. But no one that I know of is going to have, you know, one event and be done, right? I mean, it's not at the small to middle market, which is what we serve.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of education in what we do. When we made the decision to go middle market and below, we knew we were making a decision that was going to require us to spend a lot of time educating our clients on the way things work. And what's fascinating is that up until our committed entry, mostly it was brokers, and nothing wrong with brokers, but they're focused on firing a transaction. You know, they're going to advertise your business for a price, and people either pay it or don't pay it, right? Mm-hmm. We don't do it that way at all. We bring your business, we repackage your business, make it real, right? Make it look like the enterprise that it actually is, and we bring that to market. And that's why we get 2 to 500% more for the businesses we represent than they'd otherwise get.
I love it. I love it. All right, Steve, this has been an absolute blast.
So, excellent, yeah.
I would like to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could.
Sure.
It's this idea I'm working with called the entrepreneurial gap. So after talking to almost 400 entrepreneurs, I've noticed this thing, and I've noticed it in myself, is that as entrepreneurs, it feels like we're always pushing forward to the next sort of goal or milestone, right? So no matter if that's in 3 months when you hit that revenue metric or in 6 months when you stand on that particular stage, you and I both know, Steve, that seconds before you hit that goal, you're going to set 5 or 10 bigger ones into the future, which we absolutely have to do. But at the same time, we get stuck in this gap where, like walking towards the horizon, the further you walk, the further away it always gets from us. Mm-hmm. So you've been at this game a long time, always looking forward. I would love it right now if you could stop, turn around, and look behind you. I mean, you started when you were 13, 14 years old, back with Steve's Big Book of Business, through an exceptional career. But I would love if you could sort of tell me how you feel about this whole crazy journey up until today.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to sound too trite. I personally can't imagine doing it any other way. You know, I mean, for a period of time, I had an experience where I describe it as being chained to my desk because I was tied up with a couple of VCs that really had very tight handcuffs on me. I ultimately walked away for millions of dollars there, but I just couldn't stand it anymore. So I guess that, you know, it's this element. I don't know, I don't want to sound too trite, but it's like being in your truth, right? I mean, really, accept who you are, be in your truth, live in your truth. You know, if your truth is high integrity and personal commitment and love or whatever it is, then be there and everything else falls into place. You know, it's just, it's really not hard. You're right that, you know, we tend to be forward-looking with our goals and objectives and intentions and so on. And that's very powerful. That's what really makes or differentiates entrepreneurs from others. But when you look back, what you see is, you know, there's a road with some really, really great successes. There's 10 to 20 failures for every one of those successes. So there's a little bit of carnage out there too, you know, right? But it's the thing that I walk away with is I feel like I can be proud of the fact that I really, for the most part, have stayed true to who I am, stayed true to what I'm here for. And when I found myself out of my truth, you know, I found a way to put myself back into my truth. And, you know, sometimes that's a painful experience. Sometimes you have to tell people things they don't want to hear. Sometimes you have to tell yourself something you don't want to hear, right? But, you know, really paying attention to who you're being and is that really the person you want to be is, to me, the greatest reward of this journey.
I love it. Beautifully said. And I love the, I personally can't imagine doing it any other way. That's so it.
Yeah. That's so it. It is. And I've had a lot of years to think about it.
You did. That's true. That's why I was looking forward to hearing your answer on that. And you didn't let me down.
All right, awesome.
So we've got to talk about the business in passing, but now specifically zerolimitsventures.com/access is the special place for listeners. But can you just tell us who Zero Limits is for, what you can do for them?
Sure.
And then where they can track you down, sort of to ask more questions?
Sure, absolutely. So who it's for, it's really small to middle market. So companies that are of between 5 million and 80 million in revenue. We have tipped over the 100 million mark every once in a while. It's got to be a very special circumstance, frankly, because up above 100 million, you're dancing with giants and we really don't feel like doing battle with Goldman, right? Down at the bottom end, every once in a while, we can dip below 5 million in revenue, but it has to be an extraordinary circumstance where perhaps the margins are very high. So an Amazon business doing $2.5 to $3 million with, you know, very high margins, that could be a really good opportunity for us, right? What's unique about what we do though, John, is that we're not your typical bank or broker. We have a value enhancement strategy. So our whole message is, you know what drives the value of your business, put together an exit strategy where you exit at the maximum value point in your business, right? That's what you want to do, is go out when it's worth the most, right? And so we develop strategies for companies. We start with something we call a valuation growth exit strategy assessment, where we do a very deep dive on the business and we find those magic value drivers. We dig them out. We find the things that make a business worth more than the owner ever thought it could be worth, right? And we help the owner understand how to layer this in or how to pivot around that value point so that they're investing there. Can I give you a quick example? Do we have time for that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So for every business, there are multiple buyers. And every buyer is going to value your business differently. Yes, there is a thing called a valuation. That's a true statement. But that's not what the business is going to be purchased for. That's a baseline, right? It's a baseline of value everybody can look at. But a buyer is going to buy your business and they're going to pay a price that's associated with or relative to the value that owning you is going to have on their business. So let's just say, for instance, you got one buyer who wants to buy you for your customers, right? What they're saying is they have product, they want to buy a market, and they're willing to pay, let's say, 8x earnings for that market, right? So that's a good deal. Mm-hmm. There's another buyer, and maybe he wants to buy your business for your intellectual property or your brand or, you know, your technology, some other aspect of your business, right? And what he's saying is that, hey, I've got market, I want more product, or I need better brand, or like that, right? So let's say he's gonna pay 10x earnings for your business, right? So with that piece of information, you are now empowered to make some very critical priority decisions. So the next $100,000 you spend on your business, if you wanna maximize the return of that $100,000, in this illustration, you'd invest it in brand or in IP, right, which is the example I'm using. In other words, it's going to generate a greater rate of return if you invest it there than if you invested it in customers. Now, no one's saying customers aren't important. What we're saying, though, is that by understanding what's driving the value of your business, you can understand where to invest in your business. Does that make sense?
That does make sense.
So you grow the value of your business aggressively by knowing where to do it. So here's what ends up happening. Even companies that aren't thinking about selling today, and there's a lot of your listeners that aren't, and yay, that's great. But it doesn't matter if you're thinking of selling today or not. The exit strategy is not about the exit. It's about the strategy. It's about understanding what drives value. So all those business owners that are saying, well, I'd like to talk to this guy when I'm ready to sell. No. You want to talk to us now. You want to understand this is what drives the value of your business. And if you focus here for 1, 2, 5, 10, 20 years, I don't care how long you do it, but you're always building value. Okay. Right. And that's the key, is really understand how to build value. So, you know, I think that that's an important lesson for business owners to get, is that it's great to focus on revenue and earnings growth. It's great to focus on getting more customers and having better customer satisfaction and having great social media metrics and having great analytics and all those other KPIs, all very powerful aspects about managing your business. What most business owners forget to look at, though, is what is it all worth? What's the value of the business over time? Some interesting curves, presentations in that video presentation that explain in detail why every business eventually falls onto the wrong side of the value growth curve. You want to do something before that happens, obviously.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to checking that out. So zerolimitsventures.com is the main site. Zerolimitsventures.com/access is this video and extra information that Steve is talking about. Also, if you want to follow up with Steve or check out more of what he's doing, you can find him on Twitter at Steve Little. Those three links, I'm going to track down the links for them, and I'll get them into the show notes on Hack the Entrepreneur for you so that they're easy to find under Steve Little. Steve, once again, thank you so much for taking the time here today to share so openly with me and with the listener. We really do appreciate it. And please just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thanks, man. I appreciate your time. Thanks for the opportunity.
Join former President Barack Obama in making data collection a little more human. Sign up for free today at typeform.com/hack. There's a special offer even as being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener. If you upgrade to their pro, you will get 30% off for the first 6 months. Go to typeform.com/hack. They have absolutely stellar support and a help center to get you going fast. When collecting data, remember one rule. Put people first, data second. And ironically enough, you'll get all the data that you could possibly need. Well, that was a truly fascinating conversation that I'm so happy to have been a part of. We get to a lot of places that I wasn't expecting the conversation to go, and I'm glad myself and Steve got to kind of push it, you know, explore some of the ideas that we were discussing. But we're here. We're at the place, the time, in the show, where we go back. Are you ready? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Do you know what drives the value of your business? What makes your business valuable? The answers to this one are fascinating. I get responses like, what do you mean? Like revenue and earnings? Is that what you're talking about, Steve? Right? Sort of question, right? Those are important factors. True statement. But they are typically not the things that actually drive the value. And we look at businesses like Zappos and Starbucks and, you know, name a business. They're connected to deep value drivers that really have very little to do with revenue and earnings.
And that's the hack. Steve. I love this. And I've never heard anything like this. Do you know what drives the value of your business? So Steve has done this over the last 4 decades for countless businesses of his and now for countless customers and clients of his as well. And I love that how he goes through the idea of asking that question, do you know what drives the value of your business? And the two answers, which is, what do you mean? And then kind of like, well, it's revenue and earnings, right? Which is not the case, right? That's like, those are like your KPIs. He says like the indicators that you need to run and stay in business, but they're not what drives the value when you're looking for the exit, right? So he uses several examples, but there's two key examples throughout this conversation, which is when he's 15 years old, he has a lawn company. Lots of kids have a lawn company. But he decides to go from just cutting people's lawn to getting these one-year contracts, and then he sells that company. And he doesn't sell it based on revenue or even necessarily revenue potential, but on those contracts, on that confirmed money, confirmed customers that you can then sell more and more and more things to. He understood that as the value driver. And then he discusses Zappos being purchased for $1 billion by Amazon. Wasn't because they needed the customers, because they probably had the same customers. It wasn't because they needed to sell shoes, because Amazon already sold shoes. It was because they needed culture. Zappos is 100% known for its customer service and fully ingrained within the culture of the company. That was the value driver. This is fascinating. This is a fascinating way to look and sort of analyze and also grow your company, is to be looking for those value drivers and don't look at it strictly as revenue and earnings. Because there's something else there. That's what, if you can find the highest value driver and present it to the people who will see that value in there, that is where you will get the exit. That's where the strategy comes in, to the exit strategy. Steve, thank you so very, very much. All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. That was a completely fascinating conversation for me, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. HackTheEntrepreneur.com. Head on over there. I'm going to have Steve Little's notes up over there. ZeroLimitsVentures.com/access will get you some deeper understanding videos and a report, I believe, on valuing your business or businesses. And you can check it out. ZeroLimitsVentures.com/access. I'll have links to all that on HackTheEntrepreneur.com. While you're over there, if you still wish, you can get the book, Hack the Entrepreneur, absolutely for free, or for the price of an email at the top. If you have not been one of the like 11,000 people now or something that have read it, now's your chance. You can get a PDF copy absolutely for free. All right, it's been fun. I hope you are enjoying the rest of your summer, and I hope you're getting ready to gear up for a killer fall and kick some serious butt as we head into the last portion of the year. All right. This has been fun. I appreciate it so much, you stopping by. Please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.